Season 6, Episode 12. It's going swimmingly. The podcasters Trage, Alan and Sarah discuss the conventions of establishing safe work method statements. Swims. Alan likens swims to mythology, rigorously enforced from powers that be, though he believes that the legal doctrine supporting them is unclear. Alan asks, do they really work? Sarah enjoys the pun, to sink or to swim. Trage uses the phrase, the holy grail of swims, before explaining his research on workplace health and safety breaches whilst most defendants had a swims documenting the related work procedures. This is a must for those swims and swaps and mops advocates.
Welcome to the system.
Yeah. 1, 2, kid. This is B. R4D. And we're gonna bust it up like this. I'm crushing empty bourbon cans with my dirty hands, poisoned by devil's weed, dreaming off foreign lands. Ever since my very spark of life, I've been caught in this astrological plight.
Hello, and welcome to the Why Work Podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. Throughout the course of the year, and that is, recently we've received a lot of media attention, well, occupational health and safety literature media attention, with respect to creating further awareness around safety work method statements. SWIMS.
SWIMS, okay. Safe work method statements, yes.
And it's funny because Alan and I were talking about this earlier today, that SWIMS are quite narrow in terms of prescriptive requirements. So the regulation around section 308 or 9 in Queensland, for example, requires those involved in high risk work activity. So construction, working at height, right. Yep. Asbestos, you've got to have a SWIMS, right? SWIMS, they're not job safety tasks or analysis, but SWIMS are just that, SWIMS. They are safety work method statements. Now, recently, I believe a lot of the regulators have introduced access to modules to create further awareness and knowledge and create better understandings of SWIMS. But I've always been fascinated by this interesting legal scenario, and that is, if we are required to have SWIMS, so if your work, if you're a person conducting your business or undertaking who is mandated to compile a SWIMS.
And a SWIMS, Trage, includes things like the work that actually is high risk, so it must describe what that work is, it Correct. Must specify the hazards, and have a determination of interacting factors and associated yep. risks, and how that yep. very clearly outlines, you know what you're inheriting, and you start to guide the work.
So before yep. Trish goes on any further, I think it's important to say that there's a lot of mythology around
yes.
SWIMS. There's yes. a lot of incorrect generalizations. I mean, most lawyers will go to the legislation and read it, but if you read the legislation, it's ambiguous, so it's not entirely clear what's intended by the legislation, mm-hmm. and that just feeds into the mythology. Mm. So at its worst, you might have a business that thinks it has to have a SWIMS for every single
For everything, car. And then it's overkill. Correct. Right. But essentially, when you have that, you tend to talk about who's licensed and qualified to do the work, yes. what are the relevant codes of practice that need to be current, or yeah. the standards and competencies.
And the mythology is very strong. So if you go to the big construction companies,
yep, that's
and
fine.
They ask for their contractors to produce SWIMS, they will have a belief about what a SWIM should look like
yes.
and what it should contain, which has no legal foundation whatsoever, none whatsoever. It's just a mythology that's built up within the industry that they rigorously enforce because they're in a position of power.
Well, it's, you know, habit and routine and customary practice just becomes almost established as, you know,
Correct.
Requirements, and then there's no deviation.
And then there'll be some businesses who say, I can't be bothered working out what are my high-risk activities, so I'll just do a SWIMS for everything.
Well, and also, they are often do those little 5x5 risk matrices for risk, and we know that there are a lot of different ways to assess risks for different situations that could be far more nuanced to give a real accurate picture. But because you've got to fit it into this document, you tend to distill it into the simplest way of articulating your risks and go check.
Well, sort of painting that picture of it's a very fuzzy topic, fuzzy topic with a lot of incorrect mythology around it. The big question, which is the really interesting question, which I believe is where you're going, is do they actually help?
Yeah, is it useful? Is it meaningful?
Right. Well, here's the thing. The law simply says this, you must, not may or might, you must have one if you're undertaking this prescribed work activity. So make no mistake, just like you must buckle up, you must have a swims if you're doing, there's about 10
correct,
or 11,
correct.
So you must. So where the mythology and where the confusion, now this, the reason why I'm fascinated by swims is I think it has been now so overthought, so over-obsessed that it's become so mythologized that I believe industry cannot see the forest for the trees when it comes to swims. By that, I mean this. Given the fact that swims are supposed to provide evidence of safe work methodology. So
safe
work
way to do the job.
Correct. You've got it in writing. You've got your template, your blueprint. Call it what you will.
As long as the work unfolds the way it's envisioned, correct, imagined, correct, or prescribed,
yep,
right?
Well, hang on. No. Yeah, well, the law says, yep. You got to do it. You got to do it. And the regulators and AIHS and everyone else are saying, look, we're offering Safe Work Australia. We're offering all of these work modules. Get your swims in order. Fine, because the law says you must. Where I'm going with this is I've just done the first metadata analysis over the past 20 years of cases. By that, I mean prosecutions throughout all of Australia. And I'm very curious by the sheer number of prosecutions before the court where the defendant was before the court, but that defendant had a swims. So in other words, I've located something like 517 cases over the past 20 years where I haven't confirmed this figure, but by most, I mean around 90% of the defendants, and I emphasise defendants, not PCBUs, defendants before the court had a swims.
That's saying to sink or to swim.
Oh, you're drowning. You're drowning because you're before the court.
Yeah.
So my first reaction was, oh, wow, you had a swims. So what?
So what?
You're before the court. And this disconnect has got me really excited, as you can tell by my voice.
Well, just break that down a bit further. So if you've got a prescribed safe way of doing work and you don't follow it, then you're in a lot of trouble.
You're before the court.
You're before the court.
Wait,
quite rightly so.
According to law, keep it simple. You're in court.
But if you've got developed a safe method of doing a job, and it turns out that it's not good enough, but you've developed something, so you're trying to make your workplace safer, and then you get dragged into the courts and prosecuted. Well, that's getting pretty tough.
It's getting weird. So you've got the swims in your back pocket. But unfortunately, you're in court and the court's asked, what happened? Well, bad induction, or they didn't follow the swims, or a plethora of reasons.
There's a tight swims and poor coupling with activity, or a poorly constructed team as swims.
All of the
changes.
Now that was what I was about to interject with, is hang on, work always changes and people have to think on their feet all the time and problem solve in agile ways, right?
So you've got the swims, yay, I can put it under my pillow.
A document, woo!
I've got a document and I can go to bed now sleeping knowing that I'm not going to get in trouble. And then, soundproof, knock.
What do you know? Trace is being sarcastic.
Knock, knock, knock.
The whole ball.
Oh, hang on. To quote Men at Work, who can it be now? Knock, knock, knock. I'm Inspector Allen.
Welcome to the system.
Why? I've got a swims. You can't get me. I've got a swims. And...
well, there is that kind of thinking that...
you can't get me.
You're being very sarcastic at the moment.
I'm bulletproof. I've got a swims.
There is that kind of thinking that if I engage someone to write my swims for me... then I'll be fine. I'll never get prosecuted. And that's so far from the truth.
And the reason why I'm making this assertion, this is my central research question, is I expected to find some cases, like some, you know, a handful. And I've done it my fair share. And I used to roll my eyes when there were, oh, we've got the defendant would go on about the swims. I go, yes, but we're in court today. So I thought there'd be a few, not many, a handful. I didn't expect this first search, so I've got to cure it. I might lose a few that were sort of double, sort of like they weren't relevant to the case. But I firmly believe they're in the hundreds over the last 20 years.
I think you might have found 500.
517 was my first search return, and squarely decisions before the court. Over the this is all across Australia, so including Victoria, so harmonised as well. So. All of the jurisdictions, it appears to have been hundreds of cases going back to the harmonised legislation. So it's about 20 years worth, because the swims is the swims. They've been around for a while. And it's interesting to note that there it's potentially in the hundreds where the defendant did have a document in place, yet here they were before the court. Well, that fascinates me.
I think your research is going to be very interesting. I think a lot of people are going to be interested in it. But one of the things that your research might produce is there a noticeable difference in penalty between having a swims and not having a swims?
Yes. Thank you, Alan. Something I'll take on board.
A filter.
Yes.
Right.
Because if it makes no difference at the end of the day in terms of fines,
why kill yourself in this effort, right?
Yeah, why not focus on a better work design?
Why not bring in Sarah and have
focus on statutory?
Have a living swims document alive.
Now, okay, so I was just about to say, well, I'm getting asked frequently now, right? I'm saying,
Ellen,
you know what? We know that these static documents are not effective. Clients say to me, and I've got this action I have to do to close out this incident investigation, right? And or it could be an accident investigation. Trajan and I have been playing with this terminology in the applications in another journal paper we're writing. But I have to close out this action. And my boss says to me, all right, you're going to update the procedure, maybe create another swims. Do you think that'll be effective? And I as a senior engineer, say, nope. But I'll do it to satisfy you, get you guys off my back, right?
Yeah, do it to satisfy.
Yeah, I'll do it to satisfy you, will you get off my back, but I what I'm asking for is permission to change the system. So I have several right now on the, you know, consultancy request bullet board, if you will, saying, help us transform organizations so that we can digitize our material, have something live, dynamic, and we're looking at whole new ways to do this with visual storyboarding, XR, Nova 10 bespoke technologies on interactive product viewing, so that we can do our verification of competencies and have it digitally banked immediately, have a system of review immediately in the cloud, and then if we're finding that there's something needs to be adapted, we might have remote assistance immediately with visual assistance and forget all this static paperwork that requires five levels to approve it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Can
it's
we
hard.
Have a better way? Can we go better than swims? That's what I'm
talking about.
So, well, first of all, you need to find out what the numbers say.
Yeah. Now, I could be wrong. It could be five, and then there could have been an error. I could have entered the wrong zero. I don't think so.
I run across it all the time where there are consultants out there that talk about swims as if they were the Bible, and
this is it.
And they flog off packages
of
swims, and they'll often say, you know, this will make you regulation bulletproof.
Yeah,
and it's just not
true. Wow, really, is that what you hear on the ground?
Like you've why don't you achieve compliance by buying our package?
You know what? That's hardly even a marketing beat up, because the law says in order to achieve compliance, I think it's Section 309.
There's no quality requirement in the
regulation.
It just says you need a swims.
That's right.
But how?
Even in incident investigations, there's not a lot of qualifier on how well and how robust that is done.
But how delicious is that to say, I'll present
under
you...
Under the mining legislation.
Yeah.
Hello.
Well, they've got SOPs. They've got safety operating... Anyway, they're just, same, but different.
But just create a thing, right?
So the safety operating... Isn't it safety operating procedure or something?
SOPs?
Something like that. But the thing about the swim, so you're right, and I love how you said it's become mythologized. It's this holy grail. It's like, we have a swims. And then suddenly you get the knock, knock, knock. Yes, but someone's just fallen through three levels of scaffolding. But we've got a swims.
They're
dead.
Right. Even that gap of having a document and then having work procedures, there's the in between, right? Is if you felt like you had to have a document, is that even transferring information in a way that is easy to receive for the level of population that you're intending to write it.
And sorry to drop, but what's coming out in the cases is what you just said then. Say that again.
Translating. Wow. Let me try. Rewind. Okay. So the level of complexity that you're writing your work instructions, you've got to ask, is that actually going to transfer the knowledge in a meaningful way to those who actually need to receive?
Pause. And that's what right. You said, Alan. You've got these guys coming in saying, we will present you the best looking swims in the universe. Yeah, fine. And then when it comes to translation...
What if you've got a workforce that can't read?
I come across this like certificate to train technicians and engineering procedures written, you know, at a university level, for example, right? Where is that disconnect? And that's where visual storyboarding with just saying the most salient information with the dramatization is so much more effective than long language.
I do have to pop this one in. In the mining and resources sector, it is a completely different ballgame. So we're talking about the industrial sector where it's under the work health and safety regime.
Oh yes, so swims is the taxonomy is safe work method systems, and as I said, there's a shopping list of activities.
That's
more complex in the mind.
However,
brought up that you have to have operating procedures, and you need to have incident investigations, and they have verification of competencies. It doesn't matter what the paperwork requirement is in that workplace protection safety model. If you've got to go to that design model and thinking about first. People and operations in between, people and culture, were they included? Did they feel part of the system? Did they have some agency in this? And then design, is it actually effectively communicating, transferring knowledge?
Yeah, but Alan, don't be so elitist. It's different from the industrial to the mines. Look, I recall the wonderful...
The legislation is different.
I'm talking about the task.
Very different.
Changing a tyre. Now, if you're going to... I know it's a massive big truck tyre.
Are you talking about OTR tyres?
Yeah, so you've got a massive
tyres.
But my point is, if there's a process you're changing a massive truck tyre outside of the mine, you're still adopting the same principles about whether this safe method of work, if it's a high risk activity, is whether it's on site at a mine or whether it's in a factory.
The legislative requirements change.
Yeah, I know, but let's use the example of working 2 meters or above. If you are working on one of these trucks, these OTR trucks,
stay on tyres. Tyres is a good example.
Yeah, well, let's say you had to get on a platform which was above 2 hours.
Yep, yep.
If you're going to fall on the factory floor of a quarry or a mine site, or if you're going to fall on the factory floor of a truck factory, the principles are the same in terms of you are working at height and the risk.
Yes.
So the understand. So you could adopt. So even though
and that's what you should do. You should be focused in on the actual risk and why is the risk there.
Yeah.
Can that be engineered out? Is it part of the work for that risk to be there?
Yeah.
Or is it just something that shouldn't be there at all?
I think the answer is going to be in what Sarah had said before. So you've got these documents and that translation to, you know, where the rubber meets the road, pardon the pun, that at the grassroots level.
And do you have ongoing feedback from from the folks who do that job about all the variabilities and the realities of work and so that you can continually contribute to a more robust system, right?
And they've got to feel safe to give the feedback.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and in the industrial setting, a classic example, I'm remembering a case from many, many years ago, a massive building, everyone's working, so the scaffolding was beautiful, perfectly tagged, it was wonderful, except, of course, throughout the course of the day, the painter would come, take off a little bit of edge so they can get in there and reach it, and then sometimes they would put the thing back on, sometimes they wouldn't, you know where I'm going with this story, but, of course, that feedback loop to the site manager to say, listen, we've got these contractors coming in, they can't reach the painting, so they're taking off this bar, but they're not putting it back. So that, and of course, a person fell because it was just an unfortunate set of circumstances. The last tradie to show up forgot to bloody put that bar there, and the next day the new tradie came and fell. So, but that information wasn't being fed back to close the loop, to close that, well, it was an illegal practice because you needed that bar, but of course, for the subby to get on with his job, he had to take out the bar, but of course he didn't put it back. So and that wasn't being fed upstream. But yet they had a swims. That's the point I'm making.
Trish, I want to pause for a moment just to help promote the workshops that we talked about earlier when we did that design sprint. For our subscribers, for our listeners, we have the opportunity to host workshops in your workplace or with several workplaces, particularly like industry specific is fabulous, right? And they're workshops that can allow you to unpack case law, where our legal pundits help dig up the unusual in the universe of when boundaries of work have been tested.
Well, sometimes usual, Sarah.
By law, I do some research here too, right? But you've got access to a lot of these legal databases. You guys pull these legal cases up. We get to unpack that with delegates, participants in the workshop, and then help them reconstruct work so that it's more robust and defensive and test themselves. Like, if this happened in my workplace, am I already prepared? Could I be prepared? If I solve this problem, might I also solve the trickle down, this really top tier problem, like problems in outer space, we talk about, solve those and you might solve some things on Earth too, right? Solve the really difficult ones and the trickle down effect of all the defenses that you put in and all the new ways of constructing work with good design. That can solve many other, have much more enduring impact. And it's a really fun way to do this with shared adult problem solving and a lot of humor, right?
And I'll wear my cape.
And a what?
I'll wear my cape.
And he'll wear his cape. Oh, that's an offer. The person that books the next workshop, the next workshop to be booked, the next one from this podcast recording, publishing, yes. Trej will wear his cape. Count von Count. Do they really want to see that?
Hey, look, they have to pay double. Look, the thing is that you're right. Vignettes, case storytelling and narratives, and the example I've given you've got a fantastic safety work method statement, but you've got various people part of the process.
It's really good compliment.
Whose fault is it? Can play with it.
It's a really good compliment to officers and directors training, right, that you do now, don't you, Alan?
Yeah, I do, yes, absolutely.
But we can make it fun. And you know what? Sometimes you do need to decompress. And so whilst the issues are potentially serious, you can certainly create
a learning model. You need a little humor, a little collaboration to do some learning model and look at things from many points of view. Really pull it apart from it. And you can look at the photos on our website from the conference workshop. Yeah. People, it's so much fun.
Look, that was a difficult topic.
People like Grace Kennedy write in now some stories. So well done, Grace.
And absolutely. I was going to say, Sarah, kudos to your organisation and to all the human factors peeps, because they seem to be a little bit bolder. They seem to be a bit more experimental. That scenario we gave, that was a tough topic.
Yes.
That from the Night Stalker episode. Of course, that is an unusual scenario. Perhaps it is exceptional, but we'd be more interested in just as much as the more sensational cases to unpack all those scenarios.
The realities of work. Hey, and that conference for human factors and ergonomics is in Brisbane this year. Oh. 2024 is in Brisbane in November 25th to 27th. I'm on the sponsorship committee, so anybody wants to, cough up, pitch in, be part of this, we're going to have such a great event in Brisbane.
Where's the venue?
It'll be Convention Centre.
Cool.
Accessible to you all. I think you guys got to be there. Cool.
We'll be there. We haven't got any excuses, really.
You got to show up.
I'll get on my push bike, on my electric bike, we'll get there. In my cape.
In your cape. Oh, no.
Blowing behind you.
There you go.
With
there,
a leaf blower.
Well, it's an electric bike, so it'll be natural. Wear my tradie gear. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trej, Sarah, and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe, and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases, and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.
What you thinking? You jumped up in the system.
Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Yeah. Welcome to the system.